I was about to put a leg out, but thank you. On a very serious note, I do think it's important that we all work together. That's what this inquiry is about. It's not only are you compliant and you've done wrong, but are there challenges you are experiencing? And together, we're going to try and sort this out. And if you have gone in the wrong direction, then you've got to come back on track. Okay? That's the other part of the opening, is that my executive secretary was rushed into hospital last night, and we are sending her our good wishes. No, not for a happy event. So, of course, one is a little concerned. But I know that we all wish her well. Am I right? Yes. And then come to the adoption of the agenda, please. Well, I suppose it's all part of the music. Offspring, yes. Anyone proposing the adoption? Thanks, Honourable Williams, just as well you're out of your sick bed. And someone to second it? Thanks, Honourable McPherson, right. The apologies? Bring them.
The following apologies are Ms. Langweni, party business.
Langweni,
yes. Ms. S. Panskak-Big, also attending a committee meeting, and so is Ms. Teko attending a committee meeting.
And they would normally go in late to that committee meeting, but I understand, and you, one of you may know, is it not the minimum wage that Labour is dealing with? So, you know, they needed to ensure that all hands were on deck for that. Right. Presentation. Presumably he's not arising from the dead, Marco Polo, but this is the bus building or manufacturing entity, huh? Right. And who is it from Marco Polo that is going to be actually making the presentation? We've got Mr. Is it Mikkel? Mm-hmm. Ixenaro. How do you pronounce that?
Ixenaro.
Ixenaro. Oh, yes. General Manager. And Mr. Tendai Mapondera. Is that correct? The Supply Chain Manager. Go ahead, please. And I should just note for the record about DTI that we have an attendance, the Industrial Development Division. It is Dr., I keep on reminding you, Dr. Taboho Makube. One works very hard for a doctorate. And Mr. Mkululi Mloto, Chief Director, IDD Automotives. Ms. Tandipele, Chief Director, IDD. Where is she? Well, then we ought to be informed. Yes,
I think Ms. Pele and Mr. Mlotta are not present. We have Mr. Sisanda Twazi as who's
have got here.
Yes, who's present?
Can you? You know, whoever you are, give me your name, please.
Thank you. My name is Susanna Mtwazi. I'm from the automotive sector desk in the division. Thank you.
Thank you. Right on top of it. And again, another doctorate, Dr. Nimrod Zulk, Industrial Development Advisor. Thank you. I should have mentioned yourself, Gerard. Yeah, Gerald Mfungi, a specialist industrial development. We do mention them first, because in the end, they are the implementers of policy. Right, do go ahead.
Good morning, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, members of the committee. I'm representing here Marco Polo. My idea is to give you a small footprint of Marco Polo in South Africa and then go directly to the inquiry. So, Marco Polo South Africa is fully owned by Marco Polo SA in Brazil. It's a listed company in Brazilian Stock Exchange. We've been here since 1996. It started with the establishment of a sales representative, and then later, in 1999, we moved to a facility where we started manufacturing our buses locally. Since then, we started with around 190 units per year, and last year we closed in 354, which is a considerable achievement and progress in these years. In 2009, researching future growth in South African and Sub-Saharan region, Marco Polo undertook a big investment and increased our factory output in Germiston, in Johannesburg, introducing new technology and processes to have higher levels of production in South Africa. Actually, we've got installed capacity to build over 1,600 units, and according to NAMSA, in buses above 8.5 tons, we've got 30% market share. These numbers here and the graphic shows which is the impact of projects that go beyond the retail usual sales and production in South Africa. We see how we've got different peaks. It's a wavy curve that represents how our workforce increments goes up and down depending on demand, on need. You will also see that in different years we've been going through different tenders. So one something that I would like to mention here is that as we stated in our checking in the Rea Vaya process, every worker we include in our factories in Marco Polo, it generates also two new jobs in our supply chains. More or less it's a ratio from 1 to 2. Moving forward directly to inquiries, to the question if are you able to meet local content requirements and how are you doing it, I would say yes, MASA is able to do it. We have demonstrated it in different processes, and to bring one of them, we were audited in the Rea Vaya Phase 1B process in 2013, if I'm not wrong, and as yesterday was shown also by the Rea Vaya representative, we went through with higher levels of local content, higher than 80%. And to give you an idea of how MASA handles this local supplier development, I would say in big words that we help financially our suppliers, bring experts to the training, we train them in-house, and we also prioritize small and medium enterprises. At this point, I will ask my colleague Tendai to give us some examples of how we have done it in some specific parts of buses during these years.
Good morning to all. Just to give you an example of maybe where we used our financial assistance to our BEE partners in the country to further the goal of localization, will be one of the cases where we used to import all our electronic wiring harnesses from our mother company in Brazil. But upon getting the tender for Rea Vaya, there was a BEE supplier who, the Rea Vaya Phase 1B, which was fully produced in South Africa. We managed to assist one of our BEE partners who was in our supply chain only supplying consumables to give him an incentive, money to start up the organization in Joburg. They have gone to be one of our biggest suppliers currently, invoicing over about 7 to 10 million every year with us. They've also gone to do other businesses with other companies. And some of those suppliers have actually been used by some of our competitors who are sitting here. We are here present today. And then we also had the wheelchair lift, vertical wheelchair lift for the disabled individuals, which was mentioned by the Rea Vaya representative, where we, instead of providing financial assistance, we provided the expertise, because to a local manufacturer who was interested in taking over the project, we provided drawings. Some of the equipment could not be sourced locally, so we also provided information on the electrical suppliers and brought in partnerships between those the local supplier and the Brazilian supplier that was selling it to us for the initial phase. So these lifts, along with the other lifts that have been developed, are not being used in the buses currently in Cape Town. the current phases of the buses in Cape Town that have been used now have also been used by our competitors in other tenders that have been supplied over the past 3 years. And then we also have a case of electronic equipment which is called the multiplex, which is basically the buttons that control everything that is inside the bus. Through providing a partnership between a local supplier and providing information and giving some of our information to a local supplier, Okopolo has managed to develop some of these components locally with that supplier, and it's currently used in our buses as we speak, and we've been using for the past 2 years. So we can say with these cases, we have gone out of our way to actually go provide financial assistance and establishing partnerships between local suppliers and international suppliers to be able to localize most of the goods that have been provided. Thank you.
Going forward, how do you ensure that your suppliers are meeting local content requirements? Well, we perform different audits to guarantee that our supply chain is really coping with the promise. We work with voluntary disclosure contracts before awarding contracts to supply. And then when we participate in tenders, we define deep contractual agreements stipulating which materials and where do they need to source from in order to comply with all levels. In tenders, as bodybuilders, we usually go as subcontractors. Usually we're not the main contractor. The OEM is the main contractor, but we take care of our parts and all the systems and subsystems that are on the body. So that's how we do it. There's original initial strategy, but then it comes down to contracts, and it comes down to tasks and auditing work continuously done in the supply chain. Moving forward, what supplier development initiatives do you have? Again, as Tendai mentioned before, we empower local companies from scratch with finance, raw material, training, drawings, intellectual property. We somehow coach them, mentor them in that path, and giving also, as we said it here, management assistance. We really believe that localization is part of a present and also future strategy of the company. We establish long-term contracts so that for them it's also a kind of guarantee that they will be supplying us for long, so that they can also do the investments, put investments in place, and also we can also assure that the quality that we require is handled, and we do it with our own quality system. Next. If there are any challenges with respect to compliance with local content requirements, yes, we have identified basically those that we are citing here. Lack of regular volume. The number of buses built in South Africa is not big enough to justify some investments. And it's not only from Marco Polo's point of view, but also in the supply chain, there are parts that, looking at the volume of the bus market, investments don't pay off. Volume required is much higher. Parts that we could mention is injection molding, air conditioning, carpets. So we are forced to buy overseas. There's not a real supply chain that can offer us the products that we require. Then we will also say that lack of competitiveness, basically it's probably a consequence of the first one, in some links of the supply chain, that as it was also cited yesterday, it makes cheaper to buy, to import and to put and to manufacture them locally. Our idea is always to build them locally, but sometimes we face that economies of scale, for example, as our mother companies in Brazil, the volume they are managing there, the prices they can get there, make the vehicle, make some parts cheaper to import than to build them locally. The truth is that in many cases, even if it's cheaper, we build them locally, but there is at some stage a point that market related prices don't allow us to put all the volume of product that we would like local. So it's a cost effectiveness strategy as well. Then sometimes we face suppliers that they are not BE compliant because the volume they are handling with us or within the industry and the investments they need to put in place to have the certificate and all the efforts in the different areas of the BE, simply for them they don't pay off. And then as a difficulty that we are facing, and we've faced more than once, is that, for example, a tender is awarded, we've got the purchase order, so we hire people, we buy material, we may go ahead with the designs, and then suddenly or the tender is suspended, it doesn't go further, or there is a change in the body builder supplier, and in the middle of the game we find ourselves with all the stock and all the investment done with no output in that sense. So as a challenge, I would say that the accountability from some municipalities is also important for us to have certainty in our investments and in the movements forward. As kind of conclusion, we identify that the best way will be to have more volume. In the end, sometimes there's a break-even point in industries, and I would say that in South Africa we are under that level of bodybuilding production, so that we are not as effective as we would like in the localization policy, because there are not enough volume to go ahead and develop everything locally. As an example, I can tell you that in Brazil, many years ago, there was a public transportation policy based on buses, and it paid off in the sense that the economic drivers also were related to transportation, bus transportation. There was a big investment there, and also helped different companies, bus bodybuilders, chassis manufacturers, to have the volumes required to make all the investments and to build them locally. Yesterday, there was a question on how Brazil can manufacture some parts that we cannot here in South Africa, and the main reason is volume. Brazil is not only a local manufacturer, but they also are a hub for the whole Latin America. So from Brazil, you've got chassis, you've got bodies that are sold across the whole Latin America, Argentina, Peru, Chile, Uruguay. So volumes are very big, and investments somehow pay off. Some ideas on how to get to those volumes, well, I say BRT and feeders in main cities, it's already running in South Africa, but the number of cities involved, if you compare it with some other countries, it's lower. Then there are also some ideas that I will bring some other countries. In some other countries, workers' transportation, it's compulsory for companies. Companies are responsible for taking in and out the workers every day. So that, again, creates the need for buses, generally. And it's part of the daily routine of companies. Then also there is what I'll call a success case also in Brazil, where there's a special target on children and how children go to school. So there's a whole program where bank, public finance, all departments, companies, and in the end, there's a big effort looking from the government where you can guarantee reliable and safe transportation to school of our children daily. So these are some of the ideas that we wanted to bring here as an idea of how to increase volume. And again, reinforce the idea that Marco Polo South Africa is fully engaged with the localization, and in fact, I would say that our track record demonstrates that it's not only words, and that we are walking the talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Members, it's your opportunity here to engage with Marco Polo. Honourable MacPherson, Honourable Mantash, Honourable Elvis, Honourable Eersterhazen, in that order. Yes, Honourable Buyani.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I want to hone in on how manufacturers have an understanding of local content from suppliers. Particularly when it relates to an industry like yours, bus parts, and the claim that those parts are local. Do you classify localization in terms of just a supplier being from South Africa? Or how do you actually measure the local content of those specific parts so that they are actually made in South Africa and not just imported and then supplied to you? And then what is the process to actually measure that local content? Now, I mean, I know in specific industries, it can be almost virtually impossible to say this part or this piece of fabric or this whatever has X component because there are so many processes to actually putting that together. So if you can just walk us step by step through that process, I think that that'd be hugely beneficial for us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Macpherson, Honorable Mantashe.
Thank you, Chairperson. We welcome the presentation, but I have a few questions to pose. One, I have noticed in your first slide that you only have temporal employees. Is that the case?
Sorry, I just missed that last part, Honorable Mantashe, about employees.
I said, Chair, I want to check when you first made the presentation, he only indicated that they have temporal employees. Is that the case? Yes, on this slide.
Mike, please.
It should be slide 2, Chairperson. He has specified years, 2011, 2013, 2014, and so on, and there's average temporal employees. And I wanted to check how many do you have as permanent employees in your company? Because for me, you staying in South Africa and employ people on a temporary basis forever is something that is unacceptable. And again, Chairperson, I want to check in which areas of the supply chain are you experiencing a lack of competitiveness? And also, what were the reasons given to Makopolo for tenders that have been cancelled? And how many downstream local suppliers do you use?
Right, thank you, Honourable Albert.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the presentation. On page 7.2, first bullet point, you refer to how you empower local companies various ways. You provide finance, raw material, training, and so on. Can you just expand on that exactly, how that works in practice? So how would you finance a company, and would you then empower them to actually manufacture materials that you would need, and how did it actually work out for you so far? Thank you.
Honorable Buya, yes, De Hazen, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 5, it says that Makopolo South Africa handles the proper local supplier development plan. Just further to that, contractors must be allowed to subcontract in a manner so that local production and content is reduced. On the very next page, it says that Master performs different orders and suppliers, so probably checking on that. The DTI also has the right, as and when necessary, to request auditors certificates to confirm this authentication of even of declarations made in the respect of local content. Page 7, you say we empower local companies. I was just thinking, after awarding a bid, what is the biggest challenge that you and your contractors experience in meeting the stipulated minimum requirements? Page 8, the next one, lack of regular volumes, etc., force you to order some parts from overseas. But I wouldn't think that injection molding, air conditioning, and carpet is anything close to original equipment specification. I mean, that local can be locally supplied. I would rather say, I don't know where your engines are from, whoever, but the engine, the transmission, things like that, that must be assembled to a completely knocked-down chassis system, you know, the tires, the fuel tanks, etc. That must be all localized. Yeah, that's it.
If you concluded, Honourable Esther Hazen. No, thank you very much. Honourable Buyani.
Chairperson, thank you. I just wanted to check in terms of page 6, what does the voluntary disclosure contract mean? Also, as stated in page 7 or slide 7, how many companies do you empower and they are profiled in terms of the status of triple BEE? Who verifies your local content compliance? And what is your plan going forward with regard to localization? Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Biyani. Right. I think I'm looking around. Is there anyone else who had a question? No. I do have one. You know, my own experience of business, you start a business, you go into business, not to be a charity, to take a risk, to get out there and make it. And most people going into business test the market and do everything they can to increase what they call, or you call, market share. Now, I've done consultancy in that field, so I know. Market share can be an overcrowded market, but you, with whatever, are able to get your market share. And it is your product that is able to grow. Now, I'm going to just check with DTI if it's possible for, you know, the externals, overseas companies, foreign investors like yourselves, to take, you know, to offer and sell to other entities in South Africa. I don't know if that is prohibited. You made it sound as if it was, that you are totally confined to servicing a tender. You can't take on any other work, because you said it's impossible to grow the market. It's a very small market. That's what you said. And we all know exactly how many buses are in South Africa and Africa. It's a huge number. So I'm a bit concerned. I hope you haven't come from some sort of public sector, government sector, where you don't actually have to make a profit. Now, the other issue that worried me is the issue around, you know, sort of a local content here. On one of the slides, I may be wrong, but you spoke about these things are voluntary. What was it? Yes, you know, on the inquiry, how do you ensure that your suppliers, your own, are meeting local content? Well, we work with voluntary disclosure contracts. And we all know how creative that can be. Knowing that, what are you doing? Do you see? And a few other things. I know you've got a good product. I'm not sure why it's not selling. Really, I'm not sure. You know, you could sell a lot more of those Marco Polos. I see them in Johannesburg all the time. The other issue that one is concerned about, and it has been asked to some degree here, one of the members asked, give reasons for the, were you given reasons for the suspension of a tender? Even if that is the case, and a tender was suspended, will you please tell me and this committee, is this unique to this country, South Africa, unique, that only in South Africa is a tender ever suspended halfway or two-thirds. Because if that is the case, we may wish to, you know, do something else in our country and DTI, if indeed it is unique. Or is it just another one of these business risks, like the farmers contend with drought and flooding? Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll try to, there are many questions here, we'll try to go through all of them. Okay. So, what do we start from? Okay, you can answer.
To go for the first question, which was how manufacturers have how do we classify local content and how do we measure local content? I think that was the first initial question that was asked. To address that, for everyone's information who's sitting here, we were the first company to be audited in local content by the DTI. There was a question where it was asked who audited our local content. It was done by DTI. When we have been, like they expressed yesterday, the actual audits are performed by SABS. The first certificate that was offered, that was given to the industry in local content for the bus industry, was actually given to Marco Polo. How the process works? The process works in such a manner that every bus that is manufactured, there's a list of components. Let's say, for the case of rear wire, for the smaller buses, it would have been 1,400 components. Or in excess of 1,400 components. At the physical level, maybe, which is the level which is tangible, it's maybe 1,400, 1,500. But if you go deeper, there's another level until you get to the raw material. What we did with the DTI is, this information is available on our enterprise resource planning system, SAP, which we use to manufacture and do all our costing. So that information is available on the system. We have a list of all these items that go into the bus. So from where it's at a structure level, where it's basically tubes and plates. So like everyone else, the bus starts at a level where we buy a standard sheet of metal, a tube, to make a structure. Those tubes come in 9 meters, 8 meters, 12 meters, and the sheets come in kgs. We divide them according to the sizes, and they're given a part number. The part number is then allocated to the system from raw material up to the point where you can actually physically touch the part until it's welded or it's attached to the unit. So once that list is established, which we established before we even do the costing, is then when DTI comes to do the first audit, it is presented to them department by department. The verification goes to the point where DTI comes in with SABS. We go to the factory, which is where the buses are being made. We take a look at, they identify, I think we did a sample, if I'm not mistaken, a sample of, let's sample, because of 1,500 parts, we sampled, for this department, let's sample 100 items. We sample 100 items. Each and every item is identified and it's documented into a system, which, a local content system, which they have at SABS. Documented, this is the part, does it correspond to the size on the system, to the drawings that are there? Yes, once that is done, it moves back, we go back we move along the line until we have a fully constructed bus. But to establish the accountability, if I bought a piece of metal like everyone else in here, if you buy something, you get an invoice for it. And there's a quantity and a size and description of it. So that quantity, how DTI then goes back to audit this is, they get the invoice, they want to see, if I say I bought it from the Parliament of South Africa, they would want to see an invoice from the Parliament of South Africa saying that I bought it. And to assure that the transaction was not created, as someone said here, people become very creative, they need to see the bank statement of the supplier and my bank statement. So the transaction coming out of my bank statement with the amount needs to be seen being received on the other end, which is the supplier's database. How do we ensure that it goes on to the to the second level. So initially we didn't have an idea how that was going to go, but I think between Marco Polo and the GTI and SAPS, we decided, okay, we established the first tier, which is Marco Polo and this direct supplier. But like someone said here, if the guy is making, let's say, a plastic cover for this laptop, this is plastic, it doesn't come as this component. It came as maybe 3 meters by 1.2 meters sheet of plastic. So where did that guy buy it? We then go to that supplier. This is where the voluntary disclosure is. Unfortunately, we cannot go and force our suppliers to give us the information, but the DTI can. So we had, I think, two cases, if I remember Dr. Taboho. We had, Dr. Makube was there, we had two cases where the supplier didn't want to disclose the information to Marco Polo. They say, but if we give you our costing information, you probably go and do it yourself. So we are not willing to do that. DTI and SAPS then went and requested the information on their own. So that information was not declared to Marco Polo, it was declared to DTI because they didn't want us to know the information. So that was done. And to tell you how then we establish, we follow this trail until the point of import. So there's two ways that's going to happen. It's either we find where the mineral was mined, or we find where the import documents when it was imported. So at that point, at the last level, which is an import level or the raw material level, that's where we end. That's where the audit actually ends. So we trace each part, even if it was this plastic, until we find who actually manufactured it. And this is done with the Marco Polo, because Marco Polo knows the suppliers. We then hand over the second tier, third tier, until sometimes we get to level 7, level 8, which is 8 suppliers down. That's what was done for the Rea Vaya phase 1. Just to clarify the process, I think it clarifies some of the questions that I've asked initially and why it's voluntary disclosure, as you've asked. It's important to have voluntary disclosure because if we force people to do it, then people are just going to come creative in it. So we ask them to give them a contract which says what you have declared here is deemed correct, and we are going to use it to declare to government. So if you give us false information, there are going to be repercussions. The repercussions, when they come, we'll take your disclosure document and we'll issue it to... So there is a backing document for everything that was delayed, signed for by the CEOs, all the managing directors of the various companies that we do. So that's how the process worked with the first process that we did with DTI. That was the only process that we have gone through so far. But this is, I'm sure this is what has now been used by industry colleagues that have won tenders past that point. But as the company that actually worked hand in hand with the DTI and SAPS to come up with most of these processes, I'm sure they have improved on what we started. So that's one of the questions that I've got for. Okay.
Answering that on permanent employees and temporary, maybe there was a misunderstanding in the fourth slide. Our workforce now is 300 workers. 98% they are permanent, and when we try to put here the impact of contracts of temporary, we mean when we've got those kind of projects, when we know that a tender, for example, is coming and it will have an impact on 3 months, 4 months in production, as it is not leveled and it is not linear within the year or the years, we cannot simply contract permanent people to do temporary jobs. So permanent nowadays, for example, is 98% of Marco Polo, 300 people working already in Germiston. And the idea of bringing that slide with all those wavy ups and downs is trying to refer to how shortened, let's call them shortened, 3 to 6 month projects impact in our company. So we've got a stable base of workforce, but then we need to add temporary when we've got temporary projects. That was the explanation.
And then these areas of competitiveness and how many downstream suppliers we use. On my database, our current database, we use in excess of, I think, 350 suppliers. I stand to be corrected, but we already have a network of almost 350 suppliers that we use, which are locally registered, the majority of which, as of a couple of years ago, have become level 1 BE or level 2 BE suppliers, because we have made it mandatory for most of our suppliers to do it. There are some cases where it's a very specialized supply, which takes a lot of money to do investments, where we use higher level suppliers, which is some of them are level 7, some of them are level 8. But in some of the cases, like you heard yesterday, there's only 2 fiber suppliers in the country. So I either have choice A or choice B, which both of them are the biggest in the industry, and everyone who sits here in the bus industry uses basically the same supply. So those are the cases where we don't have an option to actually take suppliers that have higher BEEs. But the suppliers that we use, the majority of them are actually local suppliers. And then to go on areas of competitiveness, we had this when we were doing Via Via, an account where cost has become an issue. It's not, this is one of the things we realized. Myself being the guy who's normally in charge of taking a look at the numbers, we took a look at the numbers. Even DTI was there. Some of the items that we would buy here in South Africa for 100 rand, for instance, we could import that, pay some duty on it, and still land it here at 40 rand. So the cost, unfortunately, that cost of 100 rand obviously gets passed on to the people who are paying for the buses, and in the country, that would be the taxpayers of South Africa and the country itself. So sometimes, as we're saying, the areas of competitiveness, one is cost, second is quality. Some of the components require specialized equipment, like electronic equipment. There is one of the equipment that's used to do such kind of things. Some of them may cost us in excess of maybe $10 to $15 million to be able to buy one of those machines. And for the volume that, which has become one of the topics, which is volume, for the volume that we generate and the product that we need to make, and then we doing it only for 144-41 buses, or even with the sales that we do to non-government entities. Like last year, we didn't have a tender from government. We sold 354 buses. So even with that volume that we have, it's still not enough for some of the equipment that we do. So this is why I think the Durban municipality guys were saying, let's consolidate the numbers to make them even better. Because that way we coordinate. If it's coordinated, everyone has a bit of number. And if it's standardized for all of us as manufacturers, it helps, because their numbers, my competitors' numbers plus my numbers, will add up to the required quantity, which we need to do the investments. So I think that was to answer those 2 questions. I hope this will be nice. Okay. The tenders that were cancelled, we have 2 cases here, one with the Skwane municipality, who unfortunately did not attend yesterday. Volvo will be able to share a bit more, I think they're here today, because they were the main contractor, we were the subcontractor. The tender was for, I'm not so sure, 140 buses, and we made only 30, but we did investments for 140 buses. So when the investment is done, we only manufacture 30 buses. The tender was given to one of our competitors sitting in this room. It's not a secret, everyone knows. So this is one of the reasons, but we are not sure of the legal reasons why it was done. And Marco Polo, we do not have official communication of how they ended up. Then we have a case of Great North Transport in Limpopo, beginning of 2017. We awarded a contract with a purchase order from the municipality, and 150 Euro 5 chassis, which are specific to their need, and 150 body components, which we already bought. And I can tell you we've manufactured rubbers, I think, for almost all the buses. They're sitting at our factory for the past year. It's inventories that we've incurred, which no one has taken any responsibility for. So these are some of the challenges that we face in the industry. So I think you wanted to understand but I'm sure yourself, you can have more information on this. We do not have, as we... that we do not run the municipalities, and we cannot ask them to be accountable. Mm-hmm. After we have been awarded a bid, most of the challenges we face is finding some of the special equipment. Some municipalities will request some equipment. Let's say a passenger counter. It's a machine that's used to count the number of passengers getting in and out of a bus. Marco Polo does not have expertise in South Africa. There's probably no one who actually makes that in South Africa because it's specialized electronic equipment. Those are the kind of things. Some of the specifications, instead of specifying on the equipment that we have in South Africa, most of the specifications will come with things that they know we cannot find in South Africa. And then DTI will say, yeah, you need to find it. But unfortunately for us, there's only so, we are bodybuilders. Some of the equipment, if specialized, Marco Polo and some of our competitors here will not have the capacity to develop them only for that tender. If there was guaranteed business, we would, not guaranteed business, but a recurring business, we would definitely invest in that. But if it's for 150 buses, which normally are supposed to be done in 6 months, that's an investment even us sitting here representing Marco Polo Brazil will not be able to sign off the cost. So that's some of the things. There's a question on how we empower the suppliers and how does that work. So I'll give an example of one of the guys that we empowered. It's a team of black individuals, black South African individuals. They were engineers. They were working for someone else who was on our supplier list. At that point, but they could not do any work because they had restraint of trade. But after some time, when their restraint of trade is finished, they approached us and said, you know what, we would like to manufacture, and we're the ones who are manufacturing this, but there is a requirement for equipment, which is specialized equipment, because these things need to be crimped correctly, otherwise, if it's not done, the bus bends, and then there's problems. So, so Marco Polo went in and said, as a group, we had an opportunity of the tender. We said, we have a tender this year. It's 140 buses. The equipment will cost you X amount. Let's say 2 million. It will cost you 2 million. Marco Polo is willing to bring in some experts from our electronic engineering team. They will come and help you to set it up. And then once you set it up, we will give, because they didn't also have money for raw materials because the components are expensive. It's not cheap, it's cheap components. We went in and we actually bought them their first raw materials. We actually, in fact, we gave them the money, they went and bought their own raw materials. But we gave them, for the duration of that contract, they were actually, they were our primary suppliers. They've actually still been our suppliers since that time, the time of VFF is 1B. They are level 1B, the company is actually women-owned, 51% women-owned. If the team wants, the members wants to see, then we. If you need to see the supplier, we have the supplier. We can give you the information in writing. You can take a look at it for yourselves. It's, I think we checked, as we were checking, I think last year, they're invoicing next to 7 million or to 10 million every year. So that's quite a substantive amount of what we have done. We've not only done that, we also have done that with some people, some ladies who are cleaning buses for us, cleaning buses, being hired by someone else. Instead of doing that, we asked them to form a company so they could work for themselves. And instead of earning the bare minimum, they actually earn the contract value divided by the ladies that have been working there. So we have, without actually not, as part of Marco Polo's responsibility to develop the organization, to develop our own people, we have managed to do that. These are some of the cases, and there's more cases, which we do not, which are not here, but we can. And how has it worked so far? One of the cases, 5 years down the line, the company is still operating. We are proud, and they are not doing only business for us. They're doing some of our guys for some of the competitors and in some other industries. They do not only rely on Marco Polo since, but we are still part of their core business because they do a lot of work for us, and they do every monthly work that's guaranteed. For 350 bus, four buses, they've done 300 of them because the other 54 were probably something else that they do not have expertise to do. So someone asked who performs our audits. I think I've answered that. That's at the SABS and the DTI. So you can confirm with Dr. Okube here who's sitting here. We are actually the first ones to be audited. So I'm sure the certificate, the picture that you saw yesterday, I was in one of those pictures. I was actually before this committee at some point, a few years ago. I was in that picture that you presented yesterday. That's the certificate that we were given by this committee, actually. It was not theirs. All right, and then the biggest challenge is, I think, we have with declarations. It's like one of those, I think someone asked, what is the biggest challenge we face? Is some people do not want to disclose the local community.
Did he say that, right?
Yes. So, and then I think the last was the volume. I think you will need to check on that.
Let me answer that one on market share. Obviously, it's a business driver, the market share. But here in Marco Polo, South Africa, we're not only looking or working for the South African market. In fact, we're also fighting hard for the export markets. We call them export, basically South African countries as well. But here again, we face some challenges related to, as South Africa has a clear localization policy, some other countries don't. So there is a lot of products coming from low-cost countries, and we cannot compete with them because we're trying to build proper quality buses built in South Africa, but obviously that ends up having some costs, and there are some other countries around South Africa that they're not willing to pay for that. We've got also another challenge. Yesterday, Malcolm Joshua from the Tikwini municipality, he was talking about the total cost of ownership of a bus. So he mentioned that starting purchase price is like between 2.5-3 million, but in 10 years' time, it's like 8 million that you invest on a bus, invest from the point of view of the municipality. In those years, we are facing big challenges because parts, after sales parts that are manufactured or could be manufactured here, they are also getting in the country through low-cost countries. What do I mean with this? We've got the intellectual property, in this case Marco Polo, for example. We develop local supply in this process we have tried to explain now. But there are also players in South Africa that take those parts. They take them to China, India, other countries, low cost. They build informal parts and they get in again in South Africa. So imagine that an operator, instead of buying an original part, that is not the case. Usually municipalities, they close proper maintenance plans, so they are sourcing from the original source, but if we look at private operators, sometimes they just look for the cheapest one. Then the problem is that instead of using a part that it was built in South Africa, they are using parts that are coming from low-cost countries. And that is also affecting the capability of local companies to build volume, because in fact, they are fighting against volume manufactured in other countries. To your question on if this is the only country that has failed tenders, I would say no.
I didn't think it was something unique, but you made it sound unique.
No, please. It's not unique, but I would say that in some other countries, for example, I know the experience of Brazil, when there are also tenders that they just fell down, the impact on the volume is not so big. I mean, imagine if we are invoicing 350 units per year and a tender is 140 units and suddenly we are awarded and then they take it out, the impact of 140 in 350, it's huge. So I can tell you, I can assure you that yes, in Brazil and other countries, the problem is the same, but when you are building 15,000 vehicles and you've got a problem of 100 or 150, the impact is less. Here, the impact, at least in our side, it's very big. If I'm not wrong, we managed to cope with all of them.
I think you did most of them, but I know Honorable Kacharia wants to just come in with a question or comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now that we have you here in front of us, I'd like to take the opportunity of picking your brains to assist us in getting our heads together around certain things. Our objective is I'd like to understand what, let me take a step back. You're a world-class producer. You sell a reliable product, and we are desirous of buying that product, and that's a benefit to us as a consumer, but it's also a benefit to us hopefully down the line in terms of building an industry and localization, which is what we're talking about here. Now, I would like to understand what I mean, you've spoken specifically about consolidation and standardization, quality issues, cost issues, specific areas which are not the requirements which are not available in this country, so you have to import them and so on. I understand that at a specific level, but at a more generic level, I'd be interested to understand, if you can assist, what would need to be true in your mind, what would be desirable for you to expand your business in this country, and what are the impediments that stand in the way in terms of government policies, market size, red tape, the feeder industries in terms of their structure, in terms of tier one and tier two suppliers to OEMs, how that can be facilitated, issues around the labor structure in this country, all those sorts of issues, and also in terms of your participation through the South African portal into the free trade areas that exist. How can we gain an understanding of a world-class operation having shown a willingness and a track record of getting involved? What are the impediments to you going forward? Because I think that would help us understand more clearly the terrain we jointly operate. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Kacharya. The issue around your suspended tenders and the like, etc., I would suggest that you do a real market survey to get a clearer understanding, because I know other vehicle companies that are here and they're having no problem selling to the neighbouring countries with a huge market share. So I think that you need, looking at both of you, very energetic, young. I know that you must be innovative, so just spread your wings a bit, all right? You respond to this. Honourable MacPherson?
Yeah, I wanted to thank you for that comprehensive breakdown of how, you know, of how you sort of are able to trace it back, because, you know, one of my big concerns and one of my big focuses of this inquiry is a massive Transnet tender that was awarded for locomotives, and we've had them sort of, you know, jumping through hoops to tell us why they can't do exactly what you do. So I find that very interesting. And I'd be very grateful if you could actually put that step-by-step process, as you've explained today, in writing, because I would like to ask them why they can't do what you do. So I'd be very grateful for that. And I just hope that that's something that us as committee members can keep back in our mind about this process, so when we come to actually dealing with that, it would be helpful. And I think that the point is well made, that while voluntary disclosures are always, you know, of assistance, that the DTI and SABS are able to take those and ensure that compliance is done without jeopardizing their ability to conduct their businesses.
Honourable MacPherson, Honourable Buyani.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to verify their plan moving forward in terms of their localization. And also, if you can be furnished with the list of companies that they use as suppliers and their status in terms of PEE. And also, maybe if they can also indicate the items that they procure from them, in terms of whether it's a chassis or the wheel, it's a hand brick, and so forth, so that you know exactly what is local. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Biyani. You mentioned SABS did your audit verification on the localization. Do you pay for that, or does SABS do this as one of their many services? All right, so just carry on and address Honourable Kacharya, Honourable MacPherson, Honourable Buyani as well.
Talking on that concept of how looking worldwide, and it's true that Marco Polo is operating worldwide, which could be the drivers for a country like South Africa to become a strong, let's say, a strong point. I would say that let's use, for example, the Brazilian example. Brazil acts as a hub. So many years ago, it was a huge industrialization policy built in Brazil. So that means that, and I guess that some colleagues from the sector will also talk on that, there are all chassis manufacturers are there, all bodybuilders are there, because Brazil is identified as a hub. So it's not only a country strategy, a country policy, but it works also as the Latin America supplier. So you may have chassis from Brazil going to Costa Rica, going to Guatemala, you have bodies going to Argentina, Colombia, Venezuela. So basically you become a hub. And I believe that we've got strategies in place, like the South African Development Community platform, that could start to talk this kind of offices. I guess there are some connections at different levels talking on different matters, and one of them could be why not suggesting South Africa as the industrial hub of the area. Sometimes you need to specialize in clusters, you need to specialize in segments, you cannot be the best in everything, but I believe that looking at the countries around, South Africa, yes, is the leader on the, at least on the bus body building and the bus building industry. So it could be an idea to work like a real organized cluster that is looking not only for the South African market, but also abroad. And then linking both comments, I would say that, yes, the volumes are bigger. So the bigger they are, more competitive it becomes, and investments really pay off. So I would say that trying to position South Africa as an industrial quality vehicle hub will give an advantage in the long term. And I think it was more or less the policy that Brazil invested like 40 or 50 years ago, but now it's paying off in the sense that it's the hub. So everything that has to do with vehicles, usually commercial heavy vehicles, goes through Brazil, in Latin America, not only for Brazil, in Latin America. So it could be a long-term strategy to position the country as an industrial hub on this issue. I think it could be interesting. Moving forward to the question of what is Marco Polo doing, obviously we are in track with this plan that we are already showing. It's working. Yes, we are going to go further. In which sense? For example, yesterday there was something that it was also discussed, is training. We've got real difficulties to get professionals that are really trained for the bodybuilding segment. So one of our strategic initiatives this year, 2018, is to partner local, we will start with one local college, and our idea is to bring the Marco Polo bodybuilding program. That means that actually you may have people trained on weld, people trained on paint, people trained on mounting, but they are not specialized in buses. So our idea, looking to our own need and also to the future, we are partnering different training institutions so that we can transfer the know-how and also use Marco Polo South Africa as a platform to learn and teach both. So I would say that apart from going in the supply chain, going deeper and trying to be more and more local every day, on the training part that yesterday was mentioned strongly, we are we have plans in place to partner local colleges, technical colleges.
Just to answer the way they required the step-by-step process, I will be able to provide that. I'm not sure to which email that.
You can respond in writing to that, because we're running a bit out of time.
Yes.
You can also respond to the whole breakdown of Marse and SAD, who does which orders,
okay,
and who pays for them. Okay. So bring that back in writing to us, and the committee secretary may obviously put a few other issues to yourselves. I was impressed, of course, with you saying you offered incentives to your suppliers. Now, you mentioned funding, and you can indicate immediately now, yes or no, is it interest-free? Is it interest? and at how much, and then expand on that in writing. But just a quick one now, response.
It's interest-free because what we do basically is we agree on terms. So we give you 2 million, but you are invoicing, let's say, 6 million. So over what period are you comfortable as a supplier to pay back Makopolo's money? It's interest-free because you use the money to buy materials for us to deliver buses to Rea Vaya. We're not, there's no interest on it.
That is fairly unique, saying to someone, here's the 2 million. When you can, you know, things are comfortable there, start paying us back.
But you're paying already in terms of the material that you deliver to me. So
we understand that, but I'm still saying it's something I think DTI should take on board is to encourage other players in the industry, manufacturers, to consider. Right, but just get your act straight on this market share. All right? You're in the private sector. Come on. All right. Now, thank you very, very much. Very exciting. Let's get a bus mark. Thank you. Members, the tea is delayed until about 10:02. So don't worry. We will be getting some bus mark if you can get here pretty smartly. And I see that's Mr. Patukolo Modada, CEO of the company. If you would present, make your company's presentation to us. Thank you.
Let's confirm, my name is Patrick Orland, not that. I come from Basmark. I'll try to start maybe with a proper statement. I was born in the industrial town of the former Transkei in the Eastern Cape, and I think that's the last industrial investment that was done in this country. And this is where I grew up, and I've seen manufacturing being something, being tangible, and I've seen bus being manufactured. So I grew up and I became an accountant, and ultimately I'm the largest shareholder of Basmark. I own 75% of Basmark through my family ownership, and the 25% I have actually empowered management and staff, where 12.5 is with management and another 12.5 is with staff. We employ about 1,400 people, but today's focus is just to talk about the local content. You said how are we meeting the local government requirements? We are meeting, and we've gone beyond the declaration, which is the 80%. And we've gone beyond to develop an integrated bus, which exceeds the requirement, both body and chassis, as defined. You know, you'll understand, you say that the prescription is on body, it's not on chassis. So you'd understand, you say that chassis is still important in most cases, but body is being put into us. We've developed what we call an iBus. It's an integrated bus and intelligent bus. We'll elaborate more at the further. We've also put up a video on the independent engine power pack that we've produced on a local basis to actually to show you to say that what we are doing physically there, you know. And then that we've delivered projects with various OEMs to make sure that we have to show you some evidence of that. We further to say that, you know, how to ensure our local content suppliers are doing all right. We audit our supplier to the raw material source, and we actually pay for the independent auditors to do that verification because we want to make sure that whatever that is done can be certified by a professional body, and it can be stand in court and anywhere, so that anyone would want to verify further that information can be able to do that. We are currently developing an industrial park in which 6 and S is at status, and where we can be able to expand on to what we're currently doing. We're building what we call a West City of Heavy Commercial Vehicle Hub. This is in partnership with the Gauteng government, and it's something that, this is why it's critical for us, you know. What supplier development initiatives? We can expand on the West City. But I just can make one example. When we empower a supplier, we don't make a supplier or a enterprise development to only be dependent on us. We actually train that supplier to be able to supply other products in various forms. Like, for instance, I'll tell you about an aluminium windows company that we've empowered. It manufactures aluminium windows and do repair and refurbishment for us. But besides that, they are in the domestic market. Should we not give them business? They are empowered to be able to do and sell in the domestic market. We've got evidence of that. They've got a successful business running. You know, then further to say that, what is further a problem and challenges on compliance? You know, we're a black-owned entity, and probably we call ourselves a black industrialist firm and all of that. We have got a solid funding from the Industrial Development Corporation. We don't look at them as a funder. We look at them as partners into our business. But one, we're not recognized by DTI as a first-tier OEM supplier. So, for instance, when it comes to incentives and all of that, we don't qualify for incentive because we're a second-tier supplier. The OEMs, which is recognized currently, are those that have been given the status. We don't benefit on the AIS. We don't benefit on the manufacturing incentives. So there's a problem in terms of how we get disqualified on those. Yet we, South African, yet we are doing what the government is asking us to do in terms of that. The local content audit, we currently find it as a box-ticking exercise currently by SABS. And I would say this because the SABS, in all the audits that they would wanted to do, they would quote us close to R1 million to do an audit. And we'll have to pay that audit ourselves as a local content. And you can't pay a local R1 million just to get the tender. You know, it's very uncompetitive. So when I asked DTI to say that, what is the issue, why SABS is charging us this amount, it says that no, they have not provided any budget for SABC auditing. That is why then it becomes you have to pay. We're not even the main contractor in most cases, and that becomes a problem for us. You know, then we go further, you know, to say that, you know, some manufacturers can do false declarations, you know, because these declarations, if they're not audited and cannot get a certified auditable certificate, how do you make sure that it's really the certificate? And we're saying that we're competing with people who are doing those kind of things. And we're saying that how do we make sure that we compete in that space? The local procurers, the people that are sitting in government, the people that are buying on RT57, the people that are buying from the municipalities and all of that, they don't understand this thing of designation of local content and all of that. To an extent, for them, this thing of local content is by the way thing. We'd want them to take it seriously. When they buy an imported product, they're actually externalizing cash resources of South Africa to other countries. And we're saying that, you know, we might not be able to get it back as an investment or anything else, you know. And they need to recognize that fact because the shareholders and all of those things are sitting in another source, you know. Then the other problem that we have is the procurement cycle of BRT buses by local government. You know, I think there's no integration in terms of the infrastructure, the ITS equipment that is required, and then the bus manufacturing. They would procure the ITS equipment before they procure the bus. They would not do the stations, or they would be late in doing their stations and the infrastructure, you know, which is a huge investment. And we're saying that, you know, it's a problem because we cannot be able to project properly to say that when are the projects are going to come out. To an extent that most delays that we find is the delays that are mostly related to the infrastructure problems with municipalities. We're currently sitting about 200 buses which are fully manufactured in our factory, which are supposed to go to a client, but because they do not have infrastructure and ITS and all of that, they've delayed us. And you see, as a black-owned entity, carrying stock for 2 years for a city is a huge problem. And I'm saying that that's one of the problems that we have in this procurement cycle process. Going to our business, you know, this business has been there for the past 40 years. We've got a presence in Johannesburg and Cape Town. And I bought this business from Charles Collins and Herman Staden. Charles Collins is sitting here with me and working closely. Though he has sold the business to me, he's still actively involved with me in business. He's sitting there today. He says that he's just listening. He's sitting at the...
and he sold his business.
He sold this business and he's committed to in being part of the business. He's working with me in growing the business to the next level. And I think that we employ about 1,400 people on a countrywide basis. We partner with all OEMs, Octet, Mercedes-Benz, Hino, Toyota Tsusho, Isuzu, Ashok Leyland, Scania, Volvo, MAN, Irisbus, Iveco, UG Trucks, VDL. So we partner with most OEMs, and some of the partners are here as part of the program, and they can testify some of the things that will come up. In 2017, we launched what we call the integrated bus and the iBox, which is the intelligent box part, you know. And this is through a partnership with RAW and CSIR. We're ISO accredited. We've got capacity to produce 200 buses per month. Our bodywork is more than 96% local content. We keep a 20-year cycle of components in our factory. We're probably in the 40-year history, we've got about 8,000 buses that are currently in the market, the South African market, probably more than 2,500 that are in the rest of Africa. Our manufacturing capacity, we've got a flexible model plant where we can do 40 to 50 units, and then we've got a standard plant where we can do 40 to 80 units, and then we've got a custom-built working base where we can do special vehicles. And then we've got a Western Cape plant where we can do 40 to 50 units. I'll touch on the Western Cape to say that how Western Cape arrives, you know. And then in addition to this, we've got an offline fiberglass facility, which we manufacture our own components, and we've got a steel component, and also we've got a dedicated partnership with Ulrich Seeds. I got involved in Ulrich Seeds. Ulrich Seeds is a company that I first bought as an investment, I think in 2006, and I own 51% of that company. It manufactures seats for both buses and trains. You know. We ISO accredited, and any product that we manufacture can actually go back to the any international market, especially in the European zone. We can struggle getting into the U.S. market, but ultimately we can be able to improve and get into the U.S. market because that's a very stringent market to enter. In the value chain, I wanted to illustrate to say that there's the real retailers, which are mostly the OEMs, that they run the dealerships and they run finance and service. And then the second part is the OEMs, where the Mercedes-Benz, the Scania, the Volvos, and MANs, where they play. And in the middle, this is where we play as a bus body manufacturer. Our competitors in that space is MAN, it's MCV, and it's Dubijon, which is now Iveco, and we've got Marco Polo and Basco. And then we've got various auxiliary suppliers that come in that would be supplied into our value chain. So we take that value chain very seriously. Both we service the retail side, we service the aftermarket side. In the aftermarket side, we service the dealerships and fleet owners. We do repair and refurbishments of buses. So we don't sell you a bus and do not maintain it. We make sure that it's maintained for the life cycle of the bus. Instead of giving accounting figures in terms of accounting for a bus for 5 years, we can help account for a bus for 12 years because after 5 years, you can reinvest in a bus by refurbishing the bus and you'll actually get a better value of your investment. In our products is a city bus, which is BRT low entry and low floor buses, commuter buses, specialized buses and overlanders, repair and refurbishment, and we also sell components, and we also sell into the African market. These are various products that we produce over the years. That's a Gautrain bus that you can see there, and that's a Volvo bus that you can see in the airport. That's the Octet buses that you can see in Cape Town. That's a specialized vehicles or emergency vehicles that you would see in City of Joburg. Those are overlander vehicles that you can see with Isuzu in the parks and all. And then in bottom, we can see the buses that we supply with Isuzu. You can see the buses that we supply with Mercedes-Benz to the mining industry. You can see the buses that we supply to with Isuzu in the RT57 space. You know. Further, our recent deliveries to the city. The last time the city of Durban bought buses was 2011. And those buses that are white on your left corner, are the buses that they last bought. And those buses are carrying them. They're probably their best buses, but they only bought them in 29 years over. You know, if you go to Gautrain, you see something similar, which is the Gautrain buses. The Gautrain buses were bought in 2009, and those buses just look spectacular to an extent that, you know, if I was not in Parliament, I would give you $1,000 if you see a Gautrain bus with a dent. You know, because we've got an on-site team that maintains buses on a 24/7 cycle at Gautrain Depot on an ongoing basis. These buses in Cape Town, we do something similar in the city of Cape Town. We've got about 321. We maintain these buses with the city of Cape Town. We're on the second cycle of our maintenance contract with the city of Cape Town with the Optare. I think we're left with another 2 years of maintaining those buses. And the other one, what you see on the bottom right, is the Volvo bus that is currently operating at the airport. And I was saying that we listen to a customer brief, you know, to say that you see that we were given a train to design, and we actually come up with the product that we get that ultimately is that. We localized. If you look at the background of our partnership with Busmark, it started mostly when we were developing that seat that you see there. I own Ulrich seats. We developed that seat locally. We've got tooling, and we've got equipment. We brought the material with the assistance of the Gautrain to make sure that we localize that seat and match it accordingly to the spec of the train. We've delivered with Mercedes-Benz the Metro bus. We've delivered the City of Tshwane buses, the Ariane. We've delivered the Ekurhuleni buses with Mercedes-Benz. We've delivered with Scania the City of Cape Town buses. We've delivered with Mercedes-Benz the in George. We delivered the KTVR buses in Ekurhuleni, and we're still delivering these buses as part of the process. We, in Cape Town, the 9-meter Optare, this is a kind of a unique bus that was a requirement from City of Cape Town to an extent that when this bid came out, we actually ran all over the world to actually find a solution of a bus that was according to the requirement. So we brought a technology from Optare in the UK, and we have since produced those buses. We were obligated on NIP to invest about 237 million. Which we did, and we've met our and exceeded our obligations in terms of NIP. And DTI can confirm that they were happy with our investment to an extent. We sit with credits with when it regards to NIP.
Just a minute. Now DTI got involved in that, but you don't get an incentive. Well, how did you put it?
It was a NIP.
Now I'm a bit confused because now you were saying.
Okay.
Is this relationship?
Yeah, the relationship is not ours. The relationship of NIP was with the City of Cape Town. So the City of Cape Town prescribed a NIP obligation to us. And then we certified that NIP obligation by making sure that if anything that DTI needed, we're able to respond to it accordingly. So we've actually invested about 237 million for that project. If you look at the market share, or I would say we currently think that we've got about 40%. We're targeting more than 50%. It would be great if we could have 100% market share as a South African-based company. We partners with Mercedes-Benz, Volvo, Hino, MAN, Isuzu. This is technically showing to say that who are our OEM partners. And this varies from year to year, you know, and then it as it goes. In terms of the bus market share, you know, in the reflection of us is where we are blue, and the other is when it's orange. You know, you can see how we've been performing over the period of years. And this is the bus market share specifically for the city buses, you know, and this is based on what has been procured. And you'd see that in 2011, it was only 50 buses that was procured, and 2012 there was 30. And in those buses, this is what we have done, you know, we did 90% in 2011, but you'd see as the time goes on to say that it has been reducing and up and down, because not only the municipalities are currently procuring according to what they have planned. All of them are actually 5 years behind, because sometimes some of them do not understand the local content and all of that, they get to miss lots of things to an extent that they find that they get stopped by DGI in process of procurement because of this local content, not in non-compliance and all of those things, you know. And we've seen them cancelling projects. It's the municipality themselves because they find themselves to say that they have not complied with what is being required, and then you know, and then they find themselves cancelling. You know, we think that the bus market share should be having about 3,000, an average about 3,200 buses a year, but that is not happening because of this procurement. And we see these are the figures that have been submitted to Treasury in terms of plans of DRT, in terms of the NDP and all of that. And these plans are not monitored to an extent that these are figures that stay there. We report to the PICC, the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating, as part of being monitored as NDP, and we report these things. And we far, I think we're 1% of target in terms of making sure that DRT is functional and operational in South Africa because of procurement and all of those things. And PICC can testify and tell more stories about what is going on when it comes to the bus market.
Yes, I just want to stop you there because quite often now you use the expression because of DGI. Now, that we'll want to unpack that when you stop speaking.
Yes,
remember that.
Okay. We'll, then we said that what will make possible investment in Cape Town, you know, in Cape Town we rented a factory in 2011 of 10,000 square meters. We did not exist in Cape Town before we were awarded the contract with Optare in 2011. We invested, we created 260 jobs directly and 442 indirect jobs. This is the workforce that you would see there that started working in our rented factory, and we did on a CKD basis, complete knockdown basis. We designed a factory and we invested the factory. Our factory is in Blackheath. And it's in between the two highways, the N1 and the N2. It's closer to Stellenbosch, it's closer to Khayelitsha, it's closer to Mitchell's Plain. You know, so it's in for all our workers' force. You know, this is effectively at a concept design phase. You know, this is effectively in 2014, actively working, producing the Volvo buses there that you would see there. And it has produced all the buses that are now working in Cape Town. And in this facility, we invested approximately about 200 million. And we say that we have got an opportunity to export certain components back to the UK. This is the factory. This is an aerial photo of the real factory, as you see on the right-hand side. And it's live and working. And this factory is here in Cape Town. You can go and see, you know, on your spare time so that you can actually physically touch and see what we're actually doing there. You know, in terms of local content, and we look at it as a core to industrialization. In understanding the market, you know, it says that what has been our product, what you see we marked in green, those are kind of our new product. And now you see that what we call integrated bus. And then we still have got our normal product. And then we added an iBox, which is an intelligent box. This is kind of a black box of a bus, you know. And then we added another function, which is training and enterprise development. This training and enterprise development is in a form of Busmark Manufacturing Academy. In this academy, we would want to be able to take out suppliers, and we'd be able to take out engineers that are going to take us to the next level of advanced manufacturing, you know. How we relate it to the market, we look at to say that taxi operators are becoming their bus owners. So taxi operators are bus owners. For instance, in Cape Town, in example, is a fact that they've given the operating contracts of my city to various taxi operators, and then in lieu of their permits. When they do that, you know, you'd find that the taxi owners have got management capacity, they don't understand the business and all of that. Part of our enterprise development is to actually empower the taxi guys as partners in the maintenance and servicing of the buses themselves. You know, so it's a core part of our business to say that how do we make sure that the taxi owners know how to maintain the buses, because if you don't look after your asset, it's going to diminish quickly. So we're empowering the taxi guys to be able to do that. The cities, Durban, City of Cape Town, China, and Metro Buses are the cities. You know, we try and shy away from legislated environments because we don't necessarily understand that space. There are private operators that are Golden Arrow, Unitrans, Algoa, Parco. We're getting hard into getting into those clients. The government departments in terms of RT57, each and every OEM, mostly Hino and Toyota, they are mostly supplying in the RT57. We're mostly the biggest suppliers behind those. You know, the parastatals with Transnet, Sunparks, and all, you'd find that the overlanders that are Sunparks would probably have come out from our factory. You know, and do we have the right conditions to sell? Yes, we think we are a black-owned entity and truly South African entity. But you know, I think there's no acceptance. When I tell buses people, I could be telling this forum to say that I manufacture buses. You look at me, I'm wearing a suit today and all of that, and you would not relate the manufacturing of a bus to me because I'm presenting it here. But come to see at the factory, come and audit the paperwork. For instance, I have to produce paperwork in my bookcase all the time to prove that I own this business, I'm South African, I've got a facility. I have to have photos, videos of what I do so that you could prove to people to say that I am a truly manufacturer based in South Africa. Yes. And then do we have the right team to sustain? Yes, I've got the management, I've got 9 GMs, you know, which are highly qualified GMs that are understanding that. We've got assistant GM levels who are understanding about 12 of them, you know, which is 50% in compliance to equity rules. We are developing engineers on a consistent basis. When we say we develop engineers, we don't take somebody who's already qualified. We take people from university level as a graduate in service training. We get them into a program. After 3 years, they can be able to graduate. An example of a guy, Tulani, that we employed as a CAT drawer from Cape Town, from CPUT, is now one of our design engineers who's actually smart. He came from, I actually moved him from Cape Town to Johannesburg. He's now one of our head designers, you know, in that kind of environment. We partnered with them. We're currently working on a next generation of a bus, which is a fuel cell bus. We don't do anything in terms of drivetrains, but Hysa Systems, University of Western Cape, and Roy Industries, including with CSIR, we're currently working on a program to develop a fuel bus. Our role is just to provide the integrated bus platform, which I will show you as the next slide. You know, this integrated or intelligent bus, I'll show you in this way. Historically, this is what happens. You know, a chassis is imported, and body is done locally. This is a typical chassis that would come out from Brazil. If you look at this, the cast engine or the block, the engine block, is made from Atlantis here. Then it gets exported to Germany. From Germany, then they make the engine, and then it gets sent to Brazil. And Macopo, the Brazilian Mercedes-Benz then will put up the engine and put up the harness and all of that into this kind of a form of a chassis. And that chassis then comes back into a South African environment, you know. And then we built a bus body. And currently, if you look at this, in terms of chassis, as you see it there, I think it's only 7%, the designation is 7% to it. And the body is 80%. If you look at the balance, probably 50% of the cost is chassis, 50% of the cost is body. But the people that get penalized is the body manufacturers who are penalized in this kind of environment. So to bring it together, it becoming one, this is why then we came back with the integrated bus. This is the integrated bus structure. We don't do axles, we do not do engines, we do not do drivetrains. So we focus on the steel. This is made of a stainless steel. This is a stainless steel product, which is South African, both sourced here from both ArcelorMittal and the other company in Limpopo. But this is a 3CR12. This will give you a 15-year life cycle in terms of the structure. If you look at it, you'd see that we've integrated the steel components that were in the chassis structure. allowing the OEMs to only bring in the engine platform and the axle, and they can bring in the harness that brings that together as well. Further, in localizing that, we have done this iBox, which is then to make this bus intelligent, where we can be able then to gather sensors out of the body and also get sensors of the mechanical staff. Then it allows us to be able to develop a local harness that would be able to talk both body side and both the mechanical side, giving intelligent information that could make people be able to decide to say, where is the bus, what is it doing, weight limitations, and all of those things, so that you can be able to know and understand to say that what the problem is. This solution was driven by various contracts that we've been involved, from City of Cape Town, from Tshwane. In Tshwane, they've got about 7 areas on top of the bus, you know, and those 7 areas, those 7 areas would then interfere with the electronics of the bus and all of that. So you'd start a bus in the morning, and it would not be starting because it's overloaded, because somebody else might have cut in the wires to get into the system. The battery might be draining that, you know, so we have a management system that manages that, so that you can have one area of the bus, and then you also do not get blamed for leaks of buses, because what happens is, one, if there's an aftermarket work on a bus, people drill holes to put cameras, to pull bus readers, AFC, and all of that. But they won't tell you to say that, where did we drill the hole and all of that. But when you get blamed to say that your bus is leaking and all of that, those leaks would be coming out from the aftermarket. But, you know, we do not have control, because it's the electronic equipment that they do. So we were trying to get to get a solution into that. You know, so this is an integrated bus and intelligent bus in that format. So it allows then the OEMs to put in their drivetrain, the axle, the engine, and the steering compartment that will drive the bus. The integrated body is 90% local. The only thing that we're really struggling to get through, but we are working with CSR to resolve, is the floor material. So it simply means that anything that goes into bus body manufacturing in South Africa can be done locally. You know, we've worked with shatterproof, we've designed glasses that work here, we've designed fiberglass that work here, we've designed everything. We probably have a product of a proper material locally made with the CSIR. We're currently on a test phase. Then we'll say this is 100%. And then we get a bus as it's integrated. We know that when it comes to the drivetrains, it's not our specialty, but the drivetrains are the ones that drive the emissions, that drive the climate change stories, you know. So currently diesel engines is what is driving the buses most of the time. So if you replace a diesel engine with a diesel hybrid, you must get the kind of same value of investment and all of that. So when it comes to total cost of ownership, it's currently not managed vice versa and all of that. And this is where we think that the market is developing diesel engine, diesel hybrid, electric motor vehicles and all of that. But what we have done in our integrated body structure, we allow the OEMs or the internationals to say that they can focus on this part of the drivetrain, which is then electric or a gas, and we will focus on the integrated body structure. In that way, we would make sure that we could currently change as the environment is changes. These are the same limitations. And by the way, I wanted to share to say that we have delivered electric bus jointly with BYD. We're being subcontracted by BYD on electric bus. On a gas bus we've done, and CNG bus we've done as well with the City of Joburg and Tshwane. And then to make this bus intelligent, this is the iBox that I was talking about, which is an intelligent box. It's kind of a black box of a bus. You put this in the bus, it acts like the brains of the bus. What information do you able to get out of that? You know, you get a 12-volt output, a 24-volt output. You can connect your Ethernet. You can connect your HDMI. You know, you can connect your audio, USB, and then you can remote start this bus. You can have GPS location, Wi-Fi, GSM, RS-32 connection, and the RS-485, and then you can connect on a CAN. Simple, then you can be able to have all kind of connections that is required by the world to be able to talk to that bus, because you would want people to be able to talk to that bus. So the iBox is simple, that interface, and we say that it gives that to the OEMs. Then it allows them to...
It comes from overseas.
No, no, it's done locally. This is a joint develop with CSIR. This partnership that I talked about with Gauteng and CSIR and RAW, it actually came up with this solution to an extent that we have the electronic engineers in South Africa that have got the capability of them design and all of that. Part of, or if I would just digress a little bit, I also have got an investment in a TV manufacturing business that is doing the DSTV decoders.
No, and we don't have the time for exploring that path, although it's very exciting. And you're going to come back as the black industrialist. Let's just quickly focus here because you've got 4 minutes left.
Okay. And then would the iBox give you safety measures, operational measures, capex retention measures, and environmental considerations? You know, so those are the four pillars of our design. And we were just looking at the housing environment. It says how many buses that are there and operating, and how they can be able to communicate each other. And then we've developed an automatic fare collection system with a local company, which is Lula, which can talk to both on a web-based and a commuter app. They can use cars, they use smartphones, and then they use this. They call it Uber of public transport. Talking about this West City Commercial Hub, this is the industrial hub that we're talking about. It's based locally next to where we are. If you look at the space, these are the 12 factories that we have there, and we're consolidating those into making one smart factory. And this smart factory is what you'd see there to making it bigger, consolidating all the factories that we have so that we can improve on efficiencies. And opposite, it's an industrial park where component suppliers can be able to supply. It's people that come from our enterprise development and suppliers that can come out from anywhere else in the world. And this is the central view. We've secured the site and we're currently on a design phase. And this is the end, but there's a video clip. I do not know if you can play it just to showcase. It says it will take 2 seconds. It's very important that we do this.
2 seconds, let's just be realistic. It's going to take 2 minutes.
Yes, definitely will.
Put it on right now then. 2 minutes.
I understand.
No. All right, never mind. When you come back to the black industrialist issue, because we want to focus, and we will be bringing you back specifically. All right. So, members, we open for questions and comments. It is very exciting, isn't it? Right. Your questions, yes. Honourable Mantash, Honourable Monsalve, Honourable Buyani, Honourable McPherson, Honourable Tiako. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. This sounds, Mr. Letter, very good to be true. I don't know. You own 75% of this company. You're not fronting.
There's no need for dialogue. That's why I've gone green.
Chairperson,
on a point of order.
I have already spoken to Honourable Mantash.
The Chair, I think that you should rule that statement is in fact out of order.
I didn't hear anything out of order. I heard a lot of noise. Honourable Mantash, continue.
Chair, I'll explain to you what Honourable Mantash asked the question. She asked the question of the gentleman, are you fronting? That question should be ruled out of order.
No. Now, will you just refrain from trying to chair? Thank you. Continue.
Thank you, Chairperson, for being the chairperson of this committee that is led by the African National Congress, not the DA. My question to the presenter would be, Chairperson, what processes are in place to ensure that local content is actually met by your suppliers? And secondly, are there any penalties if a local supplier is found to have misrepresented the actual local content? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Mantash, Honourable Bunskalpe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to welcome the presentation, and I want to know
how many downstream local suppliers does BASMEC use, and what supplier development programs do we have in place? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Van Skalbeek. Honourable Bunyani, I do see your hand, Honourable Pacharia.
Thanks, Chair. The presenter indicated that the company is 40 years in existence. And as in democracy, we are 23 years in existence. That means there's some 17 years.
I can barely hear you, so I know no one else can. I know you speak softly. That's
okay.
Why you need the mic.
No, let me just continue, Chair. Thanks. I just wanted to check, who do you propose should pay the verification, as you indicated that no one pays of the local content? And for interest's sake, I wanted just to know how do you understand fronting or silent partner? Just those two words. I just wanted to check this. And also, you said how many shares do you own in the company, just for interest sake. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Biani. Honourable MacPherson.
Yeah, I just want to say that I think that it is unfortunate at best and disgusting at worst that people would think that a successful black businessman is the front of some other person in the background. And I want to apologize that you've been subjected to that today, because I don't think that you deserve that. And the insinuations that have been made to you are truly reprehensible. What I do want to ask you is, under your problem statement on local content, you describe that there's no recognition as a Tier 1 OEM by DTI officials, and therefore is disqualified from any incentive schemes. Can you just further elaborate on what you would have used that funding for, and you know, when you made those applications, and what was the engagements with the DTI? And ultimately, what was their responses to them? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable MacPherson. Honourable Tiako.
Thanks, Chair. We welcome the presentation, and we are happy to see that there are blacks out there, and you come, as the Chairperson is saying, on the black industrialization, and a black industrialist. What I want to check, Chair, have you empowered, how many have you empowered on the on your companies? How many companies have they empowered, especially the youth? I want to have an idea. Do you cover that part? And on your presentation, because I arrived late, here you said you have delivered. And how many have you delivered the buses up to date? You give us a clue. So my question is there on the youth empowerment. How do you, your strategy there, how do you take the youth on board?
Thank you, Honourable Tiako. Just while I stop there for a moment, you may have seen some people walking in and out. Honourable Van Skalkwijk and Honourable Tiako were in the Labour Committee, as I said earlier, and they've now returned. The Honourable Williams has gone out for medical reasons, and the Honourable Esterhazen, who was sitting at the bottom there, has gone off to, I think, mineral resources. All right, it's not a question of not being interested. They have other obligations as well. Honourable Kachalia?
Thank you, Mr. Nodada, for your presentation.
the purpose of this committee sitting, as I understand it, in this specific instance, is to provide oversight over the issue of localization, and your presentation speaks precisely to that. It's a sterling example, in my view, of specific localization and the emergence of indigenous entrepreneurs who have taken advantage of this to push that particular agenda forward. I congratulate you on this. I'm covered in large measure by my colleague, the Honourable MacPherson, but I'd like to add that I'm reasonably astounded that when we are, by some of my colleagues here, comments, because when we sit here and provide oversight and are ostensibly looking to see the emergence of people like yourselves, there's no room for gratuitous innuendo. I thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Kecharia. I will comment on some of the issues in a moment, but I do have both a comment and a question. I really was impressed to hear you talking about this block. You said words to the effect. The engine blocks are made in South Africa in Atlantis. Did I get that right? I am right. Right. And then they go by ship, no doubt, to Germany, and by train off after landing perhaps in Rotterdam or wherever. Then they go all over the world, having been added more value onto in Germany, and they then go, as it were, to be used. Am I right? And you mentioned some of them go to Brazil. I find that amazing, that they are able to produce an engine block, but we can't produce a chassis. I've raised this issue of chassis over and over again. It's more difficult to produce an engine block, the steel components in there, etc., the composition. So I'm putting it to all of the manufacturers, including trade and industry. Why aren't we producing chassis here? I want to know in writing. Right. Now, with respect to some of the comments on that, on the one hand, as I said, we're all impressed with the presentation. It's exciting. I've already raised my concern that you weren't getting the benefit of an incentive. However, we have every obligation to ask, but we should have asked this of all of the companies, is there any fronting in your company? Because it was a serious and remains a serious issue with respect to BBBE. But it is something, honourable members, we should have addressed to all companies coming here. Do you follow? No, thank you very much. Visitors up there. Right. I can't, is this at the Ben Gurion University? And we all know Ben Gurion is in Israel. I don't know what it is they're studying. Perhaps it's over a variety of courses, is it? Variety, there we are. And
the Arab students that have come to learn from South Africa.
Oh yes, you see, they come to learn from us, not always the other way around. Thank you. Now the issue is this. We are, as Trade and Industry, the Portfolio Committee, which is a multi-party committee, is addressing the issue of why localization is not working as effectively as it should. That is, the local content should have increased much more in all companies by now. And currently, we have before us manufacturers in the bus building. Would that be correct? Bus building group. We also are addressing, and we were quite stunned and, you know, surprised pleasantly that we have a long-standing, because the black industrialist sitting here in front of us didn't start 3 years ago when the program started, but has been in business for some time. Okay, so, and That is something we are trying to promote, black industrialists. That is people in that grouping who can now take advantage. So, yes, it is an impressive presentation. Do respond. Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members. I'll start with the issue that to confirm that I'm a 75% shareholder of the business. Yes, I am 75% shareholder of the business. I just wanted to take 75%. In fact, I bought 100% of the business. Initially, I bought 49%, and over the period of years, I bought the balance of the shares out from Charles Collins and Herman Stade as the family. Just to emphasize, to say, to demonstrate the ownership. I remember walking in the city of Cape Town with Charles Collins. I think it was in 2011, and describing to say that we are partners in this bus manufacturing business. You know, and I think from 2011 he left Joburg when I actually moved and be actively involved with the business. He left and moved from Gauteng because he said that there's no space for both of us to run this business. And he said that, let me go and drive the Western Cape. He moved to Western Cape. He's been staying at Stellenbosch for the past few years to an extent that, so that we can be able to do things differently. Over a period of years, and then I bought the balance of the shares. So I'm actively involved in the business. I'm an accountant by profession, but whatever that I've spoken about in terms of engineering, manufacturing, and industrialization, it's something that I've learned over a period of time. It's not something that I can be able to talk on a technical core of it and certify it. But if you give me numbers to crunch and quantify, I'll be able to give an answer, evaluation, a cash flow projection that is actually factual and all of that. But it's over a period of time. So I am actively involved in the business. And this is why I kept on saying that, you know, it becomes an issue, and I'll say that it's an acceptance issue to see a black industrialist coming out from South Africa. And I remember the opening statement to say that I grew up in Butterworth, where it was an industrial town. I have seen manufacturing as growing up, and it actually inspired me. What happened in Butterworth, to give a correct example, in 1990 or in the 80s, when I grew up, it was the Taiwanese and the Germans that used to own the factories, the buyers, the Basaf, and all of that that were based in Butterworth. I think one of the people that are sitting here, Ray, Uncle Ray, who's sitting there, I call him Mr. Bass, and I think he can speak fluent Xhosa because he worked in my hometown in the 80s, you know, because of manufacturing buses over a period. I think he used to work for Basaf in that period in time. I walked into that factory. So I got inspired, but what in my learning curve, I told myself to say that I do not want to work as the many people that were workers in those factories. I wanted to own those factories, and it has been a dream to own those factories. I was easily distracted by Saul Kessner when we visited Sun City, where because I saw how money was packed in numbers in the gambling, but I actually came to be an accountant because I saw how accountants made money in Saul Kessner. But I went back to the core of investing in industries and being actively involved in what I do. This is why then I have the 75% of the business.
How do we get the responses? You know, Honourable Kachalia, you don't normally chip in. Right, please respond.
Okay.
No, Chairperson, you know, the
Honourable Mantash, you know what our problem is? Time has been totally against us.
Okay. How do we verify the process of local content, and what do we do when it comes to misrepresentation? A bill of materials for a bus, it consists of about 1,800 parts. And those 1,800 parts, they actually, in our database, we can actually show you a spreadsheet, will tell you to say that where the source of material, supplier, and all. And in anyone who misrepresented in terms of the chemical he uses there and all of that, our auditors will tell us, and then we disqualify that supplier from our database immediately because we cannot afford any misrepresentation. In my understanding, this local content is criminal offense if somebody does not comply to it, or I might be misguided. But, you know, we take that seriously. I don't want to go to any jail, you know. I've never been to one. And then how do you say that? How many suppliers and ED that you have? We have what we call Basmark Manufacturing Academy. In Basmark Manufacturing Academy, our focus is on training and development of artisans, bodybuilders, and all of that are coming to our factory. We're an accredited provider by Mercita to be able to train artisans to grow up and develop over a period of time. So when we take somebody on an apprenticeship, you know, it's a period of 36 months, we're not looking at short-term solutions. We're looking at empowering people with the skills. That's what is core. And those skills are core for our future of our business. Then the second part, as we industrialize and grow and all of that, we need to grow suppliers. I think we've currently got about 50 black-owned suppliers in our space, and we're continuously growing that. And you'd say that, how do we do that? In addition of me running the business, I dedicate my first Thursday of the month and run something that I call Entrepreneur Talks, where I talk about to youth entrepreneurs, you know, where I talk directly to say that I would want, it's called, it's like a pyramid. You sit there on top alone and you do not find the support balance. And it's easy to be blown by the wind when you're sitting there top alone. So I'm building up a base with the Entrepreneurs Talk, where I actually talk to the entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs. They do not pay where I talk. I empower them on financial management skills, on business skills, on entrepreneurship. And I invite other speakers, other funders, and people that have actually helped me into my journey into making sure that I become an entrepreneur. So that's what I do as an addition to that. You know, and then you say that who should pay for verification? In my opinion, it cannot be independent if I pay for the verification. It needs to be paid by somebody who requires this. It should be DTI and SABS. If they do not have any budget or any capacity to be able to do this, they need to be capacitated in that regard, because to make sure that this verification that we're talking about and this monitoring that we're talking about is actually actively done. Because whenever I talk to the SABS guys, they will tell me to say that, no, we do not have the budget, we do not have this, and I've got a problem with that. And then to say that, you know, on the issue about fronting, I think I would say that I am not working for anyone else. I'm working for the growth and wealth of my own kids. My adult child, who's 18 years old now, is actually studying in Poland. He's studying engineering in Poland and visual communications, which is the animation of industrialization and all of that. Because I need to be able to build this business for somebody to be able to grow. But not only focusing to my son, it's also to focusing to other youth entrepreneurs that are growing. And I'm saying that I would want to see many of these coming up. And then, on that, why we not disqualify as a first-year supplier? You know, I think it's a question came from here. The OEMs, or the original equipment manufacturers, are recognized as people that manufacture cars, buses, trucks. We only focus on the part of bus body, you know, and then in the interpretation or legislation, they don't find us as an O in that area, you know, to an extent that we find ourselves, it becomes a problem. And then who have you engaged or have you empowered as youth? If you would talk about...
to ask you to do is to give us a list of the people you have empowered, in terms of you've gone to make talks to people, you've indicated to groups, because if you make a talk, it's not to one person.
Yes.
And the number of people you have empowered, because you've actually had 45 minutes. We've run out of time, unfortunately. So what I'm going to ask you to do at this moment is to respond to the balance in writing, and also to explain your role as the 75% shareholder of this company in the Maya Buya bus tender that was cancelled in the Eastern Cape. Right. because I could go on and on. I wish we'd allocated more time to this. Unfortunately, we didn't. So you only have 3 minutes left.
Okay, I'll try to use that 3 minutes. I'll give an example. Velani Mboweni and Kevin Tebenare. Velani is the developer of Lula, which is an automatic fare collection system. He's 24 years old. He's a graduate from UCT, and I'm empowering him as an ongoing process. He's got a system that is competing as I call it an Uber of public transport, and you're going to see Velani growing. Kevin Tebenare, similar, is a manufacturer of aluminium windows and is progressive. And the list is endless, but I can be able to give that offer. And then the last question on says that how is the value chain says that the engines or the casting is done. Atlantis Ford, it used to be part of Mercedes. They've just sold it to a German consortium. And it's based here in Atlantis, where they make engine blocks. And those engine blocks are then used. And it uses iron, it uses steel, and it uses foundries. It's the industries that we have in South Africa, Score Metals, ArcelorMittal, various companies that are in this space. But they are producing this for the export market instead of... And this is where we say that we can be able to add value into what they're currently doing. They are selling at a base on import parity pricing in terms of oil. So to an extent that it becomes expensive to even buy from them in terms of this. But should this be removed, that regulation be removed, and we get a better access, I think something can be done.
Nadada, you're the CEO, but you're also the major shareholder, all right? I'm going to allow you, when you come, we come back from tea, to respond on the other issue, Dr. Tebogo Mokube, all right? We need to go to our tea before it actually disappears and gets cold or what. Last, when we came in, not everyone could even get a cup of tea. But I want to thank you. That was riveting. Thank you. Can we please take a tea break? It is 20 past until 12:30.